I'm Bob Boylan with All Songs Considered. So we have something special today, a few things actually. First off, we have a new song, an exclusive by rapper Danny Brown. He has a new album coming out September 30th. It's called Atrocity Exhibition. You'll hear a new song called Rolling Stone a little later as part of this other thing we have, an interview with Danny Brown done by writer Tim Hotep Aku, who's been on All Songs Considered talking about hip-hop. You may remember a conversation we had about Kendrick Lamar. Tim came to us and said that for him, Danny Brown is this captivating rapper, a musician with a singular voice, and he wanted to ask one question. What was the song that changed him or inspired him? And for Danny Brown, it was this song by Nas called The World Is Yours.
It's yours. Whose world is this?
The world is yours. The world is yours.
It's mine, it's mine, it's mine. Whose world is this?
It's yours.
It's mine, it's mine, it's mine. Whose world is this?
The world is yours, the world is yours.
It's mine, it's mine, it's mine.
I sip the dumb peak, watching Gandhi till I'm charged and writing in my book of rhymes. All the words past the margin, the whole of mic I'm throbbing. Mechanical movement, understandable smooth shit that murderers move with. The thief's theme, the thief's play theme. Me at night, they won't act right. The fiend of hip hop has got me stuck like a crack pipe. The mind activation, react like I'm facing time like Pappy Mason. With pins I'm embracing, wipe the sweat off my dome, spit the phlegm on the streets. Sway Tim's on my beats, makes my cypher complete. Weather cruising in a six cab, a Montero Jeep, I can't call it. The beats make me falling asleep, I keep falling, but never falling 6 feet deep. I'm out for presidents to represent me.
Say what?
I'm out for presidents to represent me.
Say what?
I'm out for dead presidents to represent me.
Whose world is this?
The world is yours. The world is yours.
It's mine, it's mine, it's mine. Whose world is this?
The world is yours, the world is yours.
It's mine, it's mine, it's mine. Whose world is this?
It's yours.
It's mine, it's mine, it's mine. Whose world is this?
The world is yours, the world is yours.
It's mine, it's mine, it's mine.
To my man Ill Will, God bless your life. To my peoples throughout Queens, God bless your life. I trick we boxing crazy bitches, aiming guns and all my baby pictures. Beef with housing police, release scriptures, that's maybe Hitler's. Yet I'm the mal, money getting style, rolling foul. The versatile honey, sticking wild, golden child, dwelling in the rotten apple. You get tackled, a caught by the devil's lasso. Shit is a hassle. There's no days for broke days. We selling smoke pays while all the old folks pray. The Jesus soaking their sins in trays. A holy water, odds against nods and slaughter. Finger the word best describing my life. To name my daughter, my strength. My son, the star, will be my resurrection. Born in correction, all the wrong shit I did. He'll lead in right direction. How you living large or broke, or charge cards are mediocre. You're flipping coca, playing spit, spades, and strip poker.
It's yours.
It's mine, it's mine, it's mine. Whose world is this?
The world is yours. The world is yours.
It's mine, it's mine, it's mine.
So that was just a little bit of Nas's The World Is Yours. Danny Brown's favorite rap song. Things I learned.
Best rap song ever, man.
So tell me about that. Tell me about why that's your favorite rap song ever.
I think because it was probably the first time I ever heard rap like that, though. What I'm saying? Like, it's so unpredictable. Like, if you just heard the way the intro of the beat came on, you didn't expect for him to get on it like that. And then just what he's saying, like, as far as vocabulary wise, you gotta think this still was like the '90s too. So I think it was like kinda like promoted. It was like cool to be smart back then, I guess.
Do you think it's not cool to be smart right now? Is that
no, of course it's not. Music is super dumbed down. Nah, no one wants to be the smart guy. That's not cool. But back in those days, I think you remember, you know, it was kinda like promoted. Like, you know,
I mean,
I have vocabulary.
I think of rappers' names. There'd be people with names like Professor in their names and stuff
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, think about it. You know what I'm saying? So it was always like promoted to be like kind of smart, you know what I'm saying? Unless you're just doing gangster rap, you know what I'm saying? So I think, but that's what he did. He merged it, because what he was talking about is some gangster, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, so he kind of, like, that was the first time I ever heard it like that. Like, it was either one way or another. Like, and you know, like, people say Nas is like come from like Rakim, you know what I'm
saying? Yeah, yeah, from that lineage.
When you listen to Rakim rap, it's more like speed. It's like more like, you know what I'm saying? It's the words, it's the vocab, it's the wordplay, but it's like coming at you real fast. So a lot of stuff you might not catch.
Yeah, yeah.
But Nas just came on there so smooth. It's like you heard everything so crisp, but it's like he was doing the exact same trick wordplay-wise, where it's like every word rolling into the next one, almost rhyming off each other, even if they don't rhyme type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And just being super unpredictable with it. Like, he had guns in his baby pictures and... You know, he want to live like Gandhi. You know what I'm saying? Like, everything in that song to me is like so crazy.
I must say, I do love that that juxtaposition of Gandhi, you know, a person we associate with peace and nonviolent protest, mm-hmm. and the best in people. And then him talking about, you know, guns
That's
in the
how
baby
he jumped
picture.
It off.
Yeah.
And then it just still, like I was saying, like even with that rhyme pattern, I sipped the Don P watching Gandhi.
Until I'm charged.
Until I'm charged. Like, that was unpredictable. He jumped off. Any other rapper would have just kept it going, sip the Don P, telling I need, and I need. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Then he jumped off, and but was keeping it like. So that's what I meant. But he was just being unpredictable with the with the with the words, with the flow back then. You know, that was like so ahead of his time for back then to me.
Do you recall?
And to be that smooth, to be able to, like, because you got to think, like I say, it was cool to be smart. So you had the people that sometimes just went overbound to show how complex and show how deep they is. You know what I'm saying? It's still the mid-90s.
Mm-hmm.
But Nas was just, like, pulling it off so smooth where he's saying, like, your homie you just watch TV with. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Chilling the hood with. But he got a little book smart to him, and, you know, he's still talking. He can talk gangster, you know?
It's interesting because... I never peeped all those things happening at the same time about, you know, to me, it's just a song that I remember being a young boy in Queens when this album was bootlegged, right? So before it came out,
that's tight.
It ended up in tapes and they played in barbershops all over New York, but especially in Queens, it was the hottest thing out. Somehow people got their hands on it and everybody was in awe of the new kid who was going to bring Queens back named Nasty Nas. And for me, it was just like he was the sound of... an era, a new era at that time, mm-hmm. an attitude. And it is what you're talking about. Not to rip off Tragedy's alias, but he was the intelligent hoodlum. He was the intelligent hoodlum, you know?
Yeah. I swear I was thinking the same thing, man. He was the intelligent hoodlum. But like you say, he came from that too, because that's Queensbridge. You
yep.
know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So maybe all that plays into a part of how he was. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, I remember where I was maybe when I first heard that song. Do you remember where you were?
Yeah. I was in the living room. I saw the video, actually.
Oh, what were you watching?
The box.
The box,
I think, back then.
The box.
Yeah,
this is for those who don't know, the box was a pay. it was before you. Yeah. There was YouTube, kids. There was a channel on cable called The Box where you could call up and for a small price order a video that they would play.
Mm-hmm.
They would broadcast. And were you the one who ordered it, or was it a situation?
Yeah, we used to have my older cousin had like a burnout cell phone. So we would just be able to order videos all day. So, you know what I'm saying? We just order videos all day. I remember one time it was a 2-for-1 Raekwon ice cream and Mobb Deep Give Up the Goods. I think we played that like for like a whole weekend straight.
Ooh.
They were so mad it was.
And
it was only that. Or Rage Against the Machine, Bulls on Parade. We just kept playing them back to back.
And see, so parents, don't let your kids in junior high. I'm guessing you were in junior high back then, right? Or maybe elementary.
I think I was still in,
you're elementary school.
Like sixth grade.
Yeah.
Like sixth grade.
Like, don't let them get a hold of your burner phone if you have a burner phone. They'll go crazy with it. Yeah. And they'll play Nas.
It was like nobody
got
charged. It was a burnout phone. It was like, you know, we could order videos all day. So it wasn't like nobody to pay.
It was charged to the game.
We'd get another one. Yeah, charged.
It was charged to the game, as Master P would say.
It was charged to the culture, man.
To the culture. As they would say these days, it's for the culture. But, you know, speaking of Nas, right, I've always said that you are a person in his lineage, even though I think a lot of people...
Yeah, of course.
A lot of people may not recognize that, and they may not see that, but I definitely feel like as a storyteller, as a person who paints pictures about what happens in his community, you know, yours mm-hmm. being Detroit, his being Queensbridge, I really see a lot of similarities, and I think, I want you to tell me if you think I'm accurate with that assessment.
I mean, of course, I learned every trick in the book from him, you know what I'm saying?
Mm.
But I think, yeah, that's the number one thing that I the number one thing I picked up on was that when I first heard Illmatic, just me being a kid in Detroit, it still made me feel like I was in the middle of Queensbridge projects and I'd never been to New York.
Mm.
So that's one thing I always wanted to pull into my music, that if you ain't never been to Detroit no more, or you ain't never been to Detroit before, but I want you to feel like you right in the middle. You know what I'm saying?
It sets a scene. It brings you to a zone and
like
a place.
The soundtrack to that place for me, you know?
Indeed, indeed. I think, I remember I used to read a lot of rap magazines in the 90s and 2000s, and a term that was tossed around, I'm not sure who coined it, may have been Greg Tate, some other legendary music writer, but urban griot, right? Because, you know, the griot in the West African tradition is a storyteller. Yeah. Urban is like, all right, you're in the hood, you're in the inner city, and you're telling those stories. And I got that from Nas, and I remember one of the things that stood out to me most about you when I first heard some of your early stuff from like the, you know, like I say, like the, it's around 2008, 2009-ish, besides the voice, besides the delivery, was that you told these very detailed stories that often, sometimes they were tragic. Like, I think of Guitar Solo. Like, Guitar Solo, I think, is an amazing song because it's like three vignettes about people's lives. Now, as you as a writer, what told you or what made you want to say, all right, I want to tell these stories about what's going on around me as opposed to, you know, just self-description? I mean, you do that as well.
Completely. Like I said, completely, I got that from Nas. Mm. Like, that just straight from him. You know what I'm saying? That's probably why I picked The World Is Yours, too, because, you know, that's like, probably one of the songs that probably wasn't so much story driven.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, a lot of his music, I didn't pick One Love or nothing like that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but yeah.
I totally learned. That's how you formulate an album. You know, it's only so much. You know, with rapping, it's just like, it's only so much you can just brag about yourself and make yourself seem so cool or, you know, make, because it's just all about, like, you know, early days of hip hop, just bragging or,
yep.
You know, you making yourself, you just making it seem more elaborate than what it actually is. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the only way you can just dumb it down to bring it back to the natural essence. It's just telling stories because that's the only thing you could be truthful about, you know? Even if I just made a rap right now, talk about myself, I'm going to make myself seem 1,000 times cooler than probably what I actually am. You know what I'm saying? But when you're telling stories and talking about where you're from and stuff, it ain't no line in that. You can't really, you know, you can probably exaggerate the truth maybe a little bit. Some people do that. I don't. You know what I'm saying? I try to make it more detailed and probably try to, I think the cool thing that I like to do is play with emotions. Like, I want to make a sad song, but still make you laugh somewhere in it.
You know what's, you know? What's funny? I think about that that contradiction. I think of a song like Outkast's Hey Ya, which is not necessarily a rap song. You could consider it hip hop,
yes,
not a rap
exactly.
song. If you listen to the lyrics to that song, it's one of the saddest songs ever. Because it's really, it's about a breakup. If you've ever been through a breakup, yeah. right? And you're thinking about, you know, I'm going to step out in this girl or blah, blah. She's going to step out of me.
So true.
But the song and the vibe to it is so happy and so up-tempo, right? That it's almost snuck in. It's almost like...
But he really crying his heart out, though.
Y'all don't want to hear me. I just want to dance.
Yeah, exactly. And he really cried his heart out. So, yeah, I try to do that, too. Like, even with songs when I did, like, with the stuff on old, a song like Kush Coma, it's really about just depression. But in some sense, you think it's a turn-up song about smoking weed, you know?
Mm.
So...
You know,
I like to play. I feel like you give your songs longevity that way because some people not gonna figure, they might like the beat, they might like something here and there, but once you like unravel the whole package, you know, like you might not figure it out the years later, you know. That's the cool thing about music I like.
I agree with that, and we kind of have a mutual pick because, you know, in this segment when we do, you know, this hip-hop thing, when we delve in, do the Champion Sound thing, we pick a couple different songs. Now, we pick a classic, like The World Is Yours. We also pick a new song or a newer song.
Mm-hmm.
And the song we picked today is Schoolboy Q's John Muir. Now, I think people saw that title and then they Googled it and they went to Wikipedia and read that, you know, he was John of the Mountains, a Scottish-American naturalist, author, environmental philosopher, et cetera, et cetera. But can I tell you what the real meaning of the song is? That is the name of a school
that
Schoolboy Q attended, right? And he attended it at a pivotal point in his life when he started banging, really. So, in essence, this song is kind of about that origin, not about John Muir, the actual person.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think this song speaks to a lot of stuff that you were just mentioning in terms of talking about...
Urban griot.
You know what I'm saying? It's some urban griot. It's descriptive of self. It's descriptive of self without being just straight up self-aggrandizing, and it has an element of storytelling because it's literally him recounting.
That's what I really, that's what I super really like about this song, that he took it back all the way to the, like I say, the essence, like just telling stories. Like, he can't lie. He can't do nothing but tell the truth. That can't be nothing but from the heart right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? That's not Schoolboy Q, like, trying to brag or trying to, like, you know what I'm saying? That's just him really just getting it off his chest, you know?
I think his album, Schoolboy Q's album, Blank Face, the Blank Face LP, which dropped this year, is superior to a lot of records that came out this year.
Yeah, for sure.
It even surprised me, and I'm a big Schoolboy Q fan.
I told you though, man. You know that's my homie, man.
Mm-hmm.
So I was hearing him work on it from beginning to end, and I already knew, like, I probably gave him the confidence, because, you know, I was like, man, this is like the most progressive, like the most creative you ever been. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, this is kind of like a risk for you. Like, you know what I'm saying? But this is the best. That's the best product he put out, I feel like.
You know what? Let's. I want to play this song, and then I want to talk about being a risky artist versus a safe artist, right? So let's play John Muir for the people to hear it, hear what we're talking about, and then we will discuss some other stuff. All right? Mm-hmm. Cool. You're not gonna put me on? What's this intel?
I mean, he really wanted 50 Cent to be on that. I don't know what ever happened.
I mean, honestly,
it wasn't supposed to be the scratches. It's supposed to be 50.
Oh,
50 bodied that too.
It would have been dope, but I like the scratches though.
The motherfucking street.
And we all know 50 Cent is or we should know 50 Cent is a Schoolboy Q fan. Obviously, yeah, you're a Schoolboy Q fan.
That's Q favorite rapper.
Really?
50.
Okay.
Yeah, that's his favorite. I mean, Nas is too, but 50th Q, big homie.
Look at guys from South Central LA enjoying Queens rap music, and people from Detroit enjoying Queens rap music.
Queens rule the world, man. We know that. You know what I'm saying? It's just hard. I mean, come on, man. It's hard to ignore that.
It's my favorite Spotify playlist is all Queens rap songs from a certain era. But I wanted to talk to you about being a risky artist. You said, you know, you were around Q while he was making this Blank Face LP. And you are well known because you are a risky artist. I feel like even you breaking through and becoming a Danny Brown that we know today meant that you took a lot of risks yeah. aesthetically and sonically, you know, because, you know, there were a lot of other, you're from Detroit, a lot of people can rap in Detroit. There's only one Danny Brown, right? Mm-hmm. And you were very deliberate about the choices you made musically, about, you know, your appearance, all stuff.
Separating
yourself. So let's talk about what it means to be that type of artist. Like, why did you choose to be that type of artist instead of, you know, you could be doing what everybody else is doing or trying to make a hit the way other people are making hits, but you seem to be concerned with just the art of it. Tell me why that is.
I mean, to be honest, as much as I do the homework and I study hard about the music, and you know what I'm saying? But I think I really just don't think that hard about what other people gonna take it, how other people gonna take it, rather, I should say. I just know what I'm a fan of and I do what I like. And then if other people is cool with that, then that's cool with me. So I really don't, I always think, like, if it ain't risky, it ain't fun. You know what I'm
saying? If it ain't risky, it ain't fun.
And I never want to be, like, an in-the-middle type of person, because that's boring, you know? Like, you either going to love it or you going to hate it.
Mm-hmm. Like, not like, it's cool.
That's about my music.
Yeah,
you're
yeah.
either going to be engulfed in and it's really something that you really feel passionate about, or you're just going to really hate my guts and don't even want to see me living. You know what I'm saying? It's only going to be that way.
Can
I want to be in the middle. I want to be average. That's average.
I think nobody wants. Yeah, I think, you know what, sis? You know what? Actually, there's some people who are cool with mediocrity and they're cool with being average.
Yes, I know that. We're just talking about that. Like, the type of people that, like I say, my big slogan is people out right now that have more ambition than creativity.
Mm.
And I was just talking on a ride over here, and it was just like, people don't even care about, like, putting out a classic no more. They just want to put something out to keep their name relevant. As long as they see people retweeting them on Twitter and talking about their new video that they just put out, that, you know, people gonna forget about the next day. You know, they just happy with that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, man, that's kind of crazy. Like, they don't know they're gonna die one day and that stuff's still gonna be on the internet. Like, I wanna leave behind something that I can be proud of. Like,
so you know? there is a idea that you're focused somewhat on legacy, right? So you don't
totally.
Wanna be survived by material
totally.
That you can't respect, so you wouldn't like yourself
totally.
Really.
I'd rather be like a cult icon than like a big like pop star right now. You know, like respect my music 30 years later, not 3 days, you know.
Speaking of your music, I want to talk about the new music a little bit. I think we're going to get into playing exclusive one song off the new
Sweet.
Record. But I want to talk about your approach to this record, right? Knowing that you're a person who always wants to do things in a unique way, knowing that the landscape is what it is, like, there are a lot of hit songs. There are a lot of single hits that'll be kind of one and done. There maybe isn't a premium on lyrics, you know, or complexity or even depth when it comes to lyrics. So tell me about crafting that album or this album, this new album, Atrocity Exhibition, in that atmosphere and with your mindset that you always want to stand out.
I mean, like I said, I met Nas and then, you know, we got a chance to talk for a long time, and I was just telling him like all of my crazy stories or whatever. But you know, every time I meet with like one of my like idols or something like that, I always just want to get like advice from him. Like, that's my thing. So I always try to like, but without really like asking him, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like, give me the game. You just can't be like, give me the game, big homie. You know what I'm saying? But pretty much that's what I want. And then with him, we were just talking, and he was just like, man, people always like just trying to be extra and worried about all the wrong stuff. All they need to do is just rap. And that's what I felt the exact same way, because that's how I was. I was just thinking about the album, like, I don't know what I'm going to do, what's going to be the concept for this album. I got to have, you know what I'm saying? Like, just trying to, then just rap. And then I just started just rapping and just making songs. And once I started just making songs, the album took a life of its own. You know, I can't say I thought this out all the way, like, from the beginning. Like, I just started making music, and then eventually the story figured itself out, and the album made itself.
Because
I just rapped. I just let everything else be what it is and just rap. Because now, it's like you can cap all the pressure in the world. Like before, like when I made music, like I didn't, you know, a lot of people weren't going to listen to it like that. Or it's just probably for my homies or something like that. But now I know a lot of people going to listen to this.
Like they're paying attention.
You know what I'm saying? So it's a make or break, you know what I'm saying, situation. Like, and like when you see Danny Brown name on a product, I just want it to be like you could totally be unexpected and it's going to be something unpredictable. You know, you can't just put your finger on what's going to happen to the point where even if you listen to it your first time, you just know how I do. Like, I might not like it right now, but I'm still not going to say it's whack because 3 days later, it might be the best song in the world. So I'd rather have that approach than, you know, some cookie cutter stuff.
That like it's always something right substantial now. That warrants someone revisiting it or at least, you know, giving it a deeper listen than they would, you know. Okay.
Like, all my favorite songs, I think I didn't like the first time I heard them. I mean, maybe The World Is Yours. But I was already a Nas fan by the time I got The World Is Yours, you know.
Yep.
But, like, some of my favorite, like, first time I heard Cuban Links, I didn't like it. That's one of my top three best hip-hop albums ever made to me. Because it was just, my ears wasn't even mature enough. Do you understand something like that?
That's true, yeah.
You know? So that's what I think comes with it a lot of times. So I want to make music that, I mean, I got real mature ears, so I'm satisfying my own taste too, in some sense. And you got some people that say, you know, if you want to do that, you shouldn't be in the music business. But I'm not in this for the sake of money, I guess, you know. I'm in this to leave behind a legacy and with my art, you know.
I respect it, and I think that is the perfect time for us to talk about something unpredictable, being that that's a through line with your music, that it's unpredictable. We're going to play a song called Rolling Stone, featuring Petit Noir, which is something I couldn't have predicted would have happened. and after we play it, we're going to talk about it, and you're going to tell me a little bit about this song. We're going to talk a little bit more about Atrocity Exhibition, all right?
All right.
Let's do it.
All that I know is to
And that was Rolling Stone featuring Petit Noir. Wowzers. So where do we start? How did that song come about?
Twitter.
Really?
The great world, that is Twitter.
Yeah, the great connector, yeah.
One of those type of days, I was up 4 a.m. and I just checked my DMs, and I had a DM from Petit Noir, and he was just like, you know, he liked my music, and if check his music out. Pretty much that's what it was.
Hmm.
You know, people send you stuff like that all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but I was like, whatever. I checked it out. It was 4 a.m. I had nothing else to do. But then, because I was really going back to bed, and then I checked it out, and then I was like, I wasn't even sleepy no more. I watched the video like 5 times, and I just kept watching it. Then I hit him back like, yo, I don't know what we can do. You try to do something, I guess. I don't know. Then he sent the beat, and he's like, you like this beat? I mean, I was like, this beat's tight. Then I was like, all right, let's get it. And then he sent the hook. Then I wrote a verse, sent it back. Then he wrote a bridge and tinkered the beat. And I wrote another verse. Then he, you know what I'm saying? So
wow. So wait, did he produce that song?
Yeah. That's him playing all instruments, really.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Okay.
Now. Him on the bass, I know that.
That's my favorite part.
Yeah, that's him. You know, that's his style.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he got the minimal drums. It just fit me. So, I mean, you know, because I was pretty much done with the album almost. So it was like, you know, it was adding them cherry on tops. That's what I call them.
Uh-huh.
So it was like, I knew I couldn't just go to any like body and just get beats from them, because like it's impossible for most producers to be making beats that's going to go with what I got going on with this album right now.
Uh-huh.
So he sent that, and it was like, it kind of fits, and then it fit.
that's a pleasant surprise. Mm-hmm. Talk about the lyrics to that song. I feel like it kind of speaks to the theme of Atrocity Exhibition. So tell me
that's
about
that.
That's
what I'm saying. Like, even with him with that hook, like, he didn't know what I was talking about with my album. You know what I'm saying? Like, but he hit it right on the, like, he hit the nail on the head. You know what I'm saying? I mean, hit the head on the nail, whatever, man. I don't know. I'm a little crazy right now. Volleyball Olympics, man. But yeah.
So tell me about the verses. I think you address a bunch of different themes on
like
there.
Like I say, he came with the hook, so it was like, I was writing off of him now.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So it's kind of easy when someone gives you a song and already gave you the concept. Because that's usually be the hardest part for me is what I'm going to talk about. You know, but he already gave it to me. Like I say, it was one of the last songs I recorded. But pretty much just me, just that's just like a how I feel song. You know, how you feel about certain situations, you know? And still trying to be clever with it and witty, too, I think.
So I know, you know, you're probably going to get this question a bunch, but let's talk about the title of the album, Atrocity Exhibition. Why'd mm-hmm. you name it that? And let's talk about the various interpretations of that meaning. I mean, of that title.
I mean, in the Joy Division song, I mean, you know, when you listen to that song, he talking about how he, like, you know, he feel like he pretty much like a freak show animal or something. You know, like he used to go perform, and, you know, his epilepsy would make him have seizures and stuff. So a lot of people used to get entertained by that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's like, you know, you being entertained by someone's, you know, they downfalls almost. And, you know, people look at me like I'm some type of like crazy drugged out, like drug addict or something. But it might be true. It might not. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But don't expect me to like, don't get entertained by that. You know, but I feel like people are now, like, to the point where if I was to come out and be like, I'm completely sober, I'm not, you know, people might not even want to listen to my music no more. You know?
Yeah.
Or like just might think it lost something just because, you know. You think it's drugs that trigger it, which it's not.
It's interesting that we, as a viewing and listening audience, you know, derive so much pleasure or entertainment from kind of seeing people sometimes at their worst.
That's an atrocity
exhibition. That's an atrocity exhibition.
Even with the book, that's what he was like pretty much talking about, like. Like, the type of person that get entertained by watching cars crash, you know?
The many faces like, of death, you know, and stuff like that. But you know what? It's almost, sometimes
you get joy out of somebody's pain, you know?
Sometimes I think about that when certain people consume hip-hop with a certain perspective on hip-hop that is not necessarily sympathetic, but just more entertained by, like, you know, what we would call the hood shit. Like, the, you know, some of the negativity. That's also an atrocity
and
exhibition.
And it's people that never would be in the hood.
Yeah.
That's why they entertained by that. Yeah, I feel you. So at the same, that's an atrocity exhibition. So, like, you're right. It's the same way. But, you know, the way I see it is that, Like I say, it's always double meanings, but I ain't gonna give it all away.
Yeah, don't give it all.
You know,
but
gotta let the music speak for itself too. So I don't want to be all just like, you know.
It's interesting because, you know, when I first heard the title, I thought of the Joy Division song, and I thought about that idea about hip hop and, you know, some people's kind of voyeurism. But it also made me think of, and bear with me on this. It made me think of a Bob Dylan song. I'm not the biggest Bob Dylan fan in the world, but I was exposed to Bob Dylan by reading the writings of Huey P. Newton. Right, so he wrote. He had this one writing about the song called "Ballad of the Thin Man," and the Ballad of the Thin Man is literally about people going to a freak show, right, and seeing a guy who is a freak, and the freak is in there. You know, they're gawking at him, they're judging, and he offers them like a bone from that where he is, right, because he's saying to them like, we're the same. Who's the real freak in this situation? You know? And so when I heard Atrocity Exhibition, it made me think of that. You know, it's like, who's the real freak in the situation? What's the real oddity?
Exactly. and that's the type of world we live in right now, where you see people, instead of them, when they see anything happening, I ain't just necessarily like, say, police or anything that's violent happening, instead of them trying to fix the situation, what they do, they pull their phone out and try to record it.
Yo.
It's an Atrocity Exhibition.
Yo, that's
it's... You know what I'm saying? And who's like you say, who's worse in that situation? You know what I'm saying? And that's the world we're living in now. We're living in an Atrocity Exhibition.
People rather document than intervene. Document for entertainment purposes and intervene. That's deep, brother. It's deep.
Exactly. Like I say, I want to give everything away.
Yeah, don't give it all away. But before we get out of here with you, I know your time is limited. I do want to talk
ain't
about
that limited because I'm at home.
Okay,
but I just want to play video games. I got my pajamas on. I didn't even get dressed. I just came up here.
See, rap life. I want to talk a little bit more about the record because, you know, we just talked about Q, who is 1/4 a Black Hippie, but you have two other members of Black Hippie on one song that also features Earl Sweatshirt. Tell me about that song in particular and a little bit about the album and some of the features and people who produce on it.
Well, that song happened, I mean... Me and Kendrick, we always talked about doing stuff together.
I'm gonna pause real quick. The song I'm referring to is called Really Though, featuring Kendrick Lamar and Ab Soul and Earl Sweatshirt, all top-notch spitters, with Danny Brown, of course, who is top-notch spitter. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, I know. I got the internet tripping right now. I feel like they just like gonna hack my computer now. Like, I'm scared, man. Like, I really scared. I gotta check my emails and stuff. But me and Kendrick always talked about doing stuff. And then when, you know, he was working on his album, he had sent me some stuff to do and then didn't really make it or whatever. Then he was just always like, I owe you one, you know? You know, he talked, yeah, I owe you one. I got you, Danny. You know, whenever you're ready, I got you. So I was like, whatever, you know me, I'm kind of like, I don't know. I'm not the kind of guy like, you know, want to ask people to get on music and do songs and stuff. I'd rather be organic and do it. But I'm like, man, K-Dot say you owe me one. So I would get K-Dot and Earl on the song together. I always had this idea, like, I'm going to get K-Dot and Earl together. And then eventually it was just like taking too long, it wasn't panning out. So eventually I was like going to have Run the Jewels and Ab Soul, you know? And then I just got Ab Soul. Then it was just, I was like, forget it, it's going to be me and Ab Soul. And then one day I was mixing the album with Ali. I guess K-Dot just snuck in on one of those days, and then he just came through and just laced it.
Nice.
So then I had to be patient and just wait on the Earl, but it was all worth it, though, when I really think about it, because, you know, hip-hop need that posse cut. Like, a lot of people, like, they don't want to be competitive. Like, you know, that's a friendly competition. They scared to get bodied on the track. Like, me, I had my verse on that song first and never changed it. Like, it's not too many artists that do that, getting on a song with Ab Soul and Kendrick and Earl. You know what I'm saying? Like... And I don't even look at it like that. I'm like, as long as I get a dope song out of it, I'm cool with that. Like, these are my homies. These are my bros. I ain't tripping on bodying them. I body somebody I don't know.
Yeah.
Put me on your song and I don't know you, then it's trouble. But, I mean, for them, we just want to make the best possible song because we know the hype that's going. Just looking at it on paper, you're like, how is this not going to work?
Yeah.
Produced by Black Milk, you know?
Ooh,
so
shout
I'm
out
just
to Black
glad
Milk.
To be able... That's gonna be able to, you know, like, cause like I said, it's all hyped up, and that's the last thing I want is like super hype. Like, I ain't with the hypey stuff, but I know it's gonna satisfy. You know what I'm saying? It's gonna hit home when it come out, so I ain't tripping. I'm relaxed. My feet is up. You know?
You did your job. Yeah,
it was patient because I could have gave up. Like, that was like the last song really we finished, but I could have gave up a long time ago. I was like, I ain't gonna never be able to make, because that was too far fetched of an idea to happen. but I made it happen. But the big deal to me was getting Be Real on the album, which I totally can't take no credit for, which was all my management.
On the song called Get High.
Exactly.
What's that song about?
This is about, it's really about, the first verse is about jazz. See, you can't give up too much.
All right, okay. So that said, I think the anticipation for this album is well warranted. I look forward to peeling back the layers of all these songs and you know, the beats on here and seeing what everything's about. All right, my man, thank you very much.
What's up, bro?
All right, peace.